Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping, rapping at my chamber door.
I'm not even going to swat that fly. I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know and they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
Wait right there, Mr. Bonneau.
How do you know my name? I didn't tell you my name.
Hang up.
I didn't tell them my name.
They're all a part of it. They're all part, all of them.
Do you ever wonder about all the different ways of dying? You know, violently. I wonder, like, what would be the most horrible way to die?
It's not my intention to do this in front of you. For that, I'm sorry. But you can take my word for it. Your mother had it coming.
Mommy, I want to see the bad man fly.
We better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
I just can't take no pleasure in killing.
Just some things you gotta do. Don't mean you have to like it.
Wait a minute. I know who you are. Yeah, but I heard you were dead.
And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming. And the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the USA, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
It is going well.
Excellent, excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
Fine, busy, but fine. How are you, Phil?
Doing all right. Yeah, can't complain. We do have two other co-hosts, one from Massachusetts, Abe, should be joining us shortly, but not 100% sure yet. And the other one from Connecticut, Chrissy, is actually at a Christmas party for work. So it is that time of year, and this episode is going to be themed for Christmas. Theoretically, for folks who are interested, we are recording this on December 12th, 2019, to be released closer to the Christmas time frame. So that probably the week of the whenever the 25th is. Let's see. For folks who are new to the podcast, once again, we are Dark Discussions, where we talk about genre films, so critique and review. So horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, cult films, and whatnot. We also have a website. Eric, what is that website?
That website is www.darkdiscussions.com. You can go there and find all sorts of wonderful things. On the right side of the front page, we have links to all the friends of the podcast, so you can check them out. Up at the top, we have links to an articles section of the site where you can find articles written by myself as well as others. We have an audio section where you can find every single episode of Dark Discussions as well as any of its spinoffs available for free. There's bound to be something you're interested in there, so go check that section out. Then, front and center on the front page of the site, we have a link to our Patreon account. Patreon allows you to contribute to support your online artists like us. Producing this podcast is not free, so if you'd like to help us offset the cost of producing the show for things like server space and replacing broken computers, you can follow that link on the front page or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions, and for every $5 a month that you care to contribute, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover on the show. We take all of the submissions from our patrons and draw them randomly on a quarterly basis to pick a topic from one of our patrons to do a show on. For more details, you can follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions.
That's right. And speaking of Patreon, we do actually have a voicemail from one of our listeners, Gage Fultz, who's presently living out on the West Coast, but will be in New London, Connecticut next year to join us because he's moving permanently over here. He's in the U.S. Navy.
Oh, so and is he coming to Mystic? Is he coming to Mystic? Is he coming to Mystic?
He said he is. Yep.
All right.
Absolutely. And he actually sent us this voicemail. He is a Patreon supporter, and his film Caliber we did just a couple of weeks ago, and he has a voicemail to discuss his opinion on the film. So let's listen to that.
Hey guys, so first and foremost, thanks for picking my movie to review. It was a pretty comprehensive review. I love the arguing. It makes it makes it great to listen to. Just to give you my thoughts while they're still fresh in my head. Talking about like the undertones of the movie, first off, I think kind of from me watching it, a lot of it was kind of a reflection on small towns, so to speak. So for instance, Logan kind of invites them into the town and it kind of invites their help into the town, which is not really well received by anyone else. And lo and behold, everything, you know, goes terribly wrong. So I kind of took that as like a comment, I guess, that, you know, the big city is kind of, you know, never going to help these smaller towns. It's always going to be for the worse. So I don't know if anyone else picked up on that or not, but that's kind of what I thought. Keeping with the undertones theme, it also seemed a lot like, you know, Vaughn was kind of nervous about having a kid, about changing his life like that. And then he goes on this kind of last hurrah with his friends, kind of like reflecting on the part of his life that's ending. And then at the, you know, the finale or the climax of the film, when he has to shoot Marcus, it's kind of like, to me anyway, symbolically ending that chapter of his life with his friends and, you know, accepting this new phase of his life as a father. So I don't know if anyone else got that either. You guys also talked about the fact that the movie was kind of simple. And I like that too. It seems like, you know, especially in genre films, a lot of it, there always has to be a big twist or some undertone, you know, something else going on behind the scenes that is this big reveal. And this one, the movie's super honest with you. It tells you everything you need to know. It doesn't try to hide anything. And really, at the end of the day, it's just this shitty situation where you accidentally shot this kid and now you're fucked and you have to deal with it. And yeah, I thought that was kind of cool that, you know, it didn't turn out that, you know, oh, the town's a cult or something like that, or, you know, some twist that would have really ruined the movie for me and its authenticity. So, you know, I like the fact that it was simple like that. I really agree with everything else you guys kind of went over. I think the gun being illegal did play a big part in it, because that's kind of what, you know, whether or not that would have, you know, any real ramifications based on the overall situation, it's what started the panic. You know what I mean? Maybe if it would have been his gun, maybe they would have taken a step back and done the right thing as far as reporting it. And, you know, it wouldn't have been the outcome that we saw. Other than that, let me see if there's anything else that kind of really stuck out to me. As far as the shooting the father, right? It seemed to me, you know, you were talking about whether or not it seemed like he was, you know, going to shoot, you know, Marcus or Vaughn. Just picking up the gun in itself, to me, would be interpreted as kind of an act of aggression, because he comes up, he sees, you know, that his kid's been shot. His immediate response isn't to, you know, fall on the kid and go crazy. He picks up the gun, which is the first act of aggression. So that would have definitely put me on guard. And it does seem like he starts to raise it. You know, maybe he acted a little fast, but he wouldn't have picked up the gun if he wasn't going to do something with it or thought about it. At least the thought entered his mind, you know, to kill these two, which is understandable based on what happened. Also, I thought the girl, right, the girl that Marcus, you know, gives cocaine to and all that, he doesn't really talk about that, but it seemed weird to me, and I couldn't put my finger on why. It just, she seemed really to be stirring the pot a lot, which they mention in the film, but, like, she, every time she's in the scene and there's a fight going on, you know, when they're beating up Marcus and, you know, when it all comes to light that he gave this girl cocaine, she seems to love it. She seems to revel in the fact of, you know, tension that she's created. I don't know what that was really trying to say. Maybe she's just doing it because it's a boring small town. Who knows? My last real thought is the small town justice thing. It's definitely a real thing. I mean, I grew up in a town with less than 1,000 people, and, you know, from my experience, people just don't call the cops. That would be considered, like, the greatest affront, like, worse than any crime you commit would be to involve outside entities, especially the police. So the small town justice thing, I think it definitely wouldn't have went down like that. People like that, you know, it's not, there's just some kind of taboo about involving outside people, and the police are considered like the greatest outside people from my experience. So if you can't handle things yourself, that would be a pretty shameful position to be in. So I thought it pretty accurately represented just small town life in general. I didn't get like the big hillbilly vibe. They seem pretty put together, but overall, I thought it was a really good movie, and it was kind of refreshingly simple. There wasn't, like I said, any big plot twists or anything like that, and that's kind of nice sometimes, in my opinion. So, I liked it. It was a good Netflix watch, and it's not going to win movie of the year or anything like that, but it was pretty refreshing, and I really appreciate you guys reviewing it and giving it your time. So, hope you guys have a good one, and I'll see you the next time I win.
All right, so thank you for the kind words, Gage. I guess he's a big fan of the podcast, which is
yes, always appreciate
cool.
The support.
Absolutely.
And given that he works on a nuclear submarine, he, you know, we really have to hope that he remains a fan of the podcast.
That's true. Yes. Yep. But good thing is he'll be able to join us in New London, Connecticut, or Groton, Connecticut, or Mystic, Connecticut. Doesn't matter.
Whatever the hell. You take five steps to the left, and you're in a different area over there. That New England's weird.
Yeah, well, especially Connecticut. Connecticut's similar to Jersey and Pennsylvania, where they have villages that are really just a part of a town, and yet they're all the same town. It's just like, kind of weird.
I drive 3 minutes to get to a restaurant, and I've gone through five different towns.
Yeah, exactly. It's very odd. We will see him there, and thank you for the kind words, as we discussed. Also, for folks who want to send their own voicemail to us or email, they can email darkdiscussions@aol.com, where we will be able to read your email on the podcast or attach a audio file, and we will play it just as we just did here with Gages. And anything, suggestions, ideas, your reviews of films we've talked about, or just films you've seen that you would like us to talk about, or just films that people would be interested that would listen to this podcast. Also, we have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where we can have you join. Just search for that, and we will immediately have you join. So there's been discussions right now on that group about Scorsese's film The Irishman, information on various things such as the new Scream 5 film has been listed as a new in production, and that it was just posted on the Facebook group. So a lot of good stuff going on there. People can join us. So I think that's pretty much it. Any news or anything that anybody needed to bring up?
Nope.
All right, sounds good. We'll get into some items after we discuss our topic tonight. But before we do all that, Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we are going to do our theoretically holiday-themed movie starring Rachel Nichols called P2.
Hi, Mom. You're not going to believe what happened.
Angela, are you calling me from work?
Believe me, I can't wait to get out of here and see you guys.
Please don't be any later.
I promise, I won't.
Angela, are you okay?
I didn't mean to scare you.
What happened to my clothes?
Yeah.
What do you want?
I've seen you drive out of here so many times. It's strange being with you. It's great, actually.
That's right. Eric mentioned Rachel Nichols, but also Wes Bentley. This was, at the time, 2007 film. This was right when both of them were about to be breakout stars. Unfortunately, that never happened, though Rachel Nichols actually had some big roles, but those films just didn't do well. So she's been recently relegated to supporting casts.
Well, I see she's done Man in the High Castle.
Is she on that TV show?
Yeah, she's on Titans. She was on The Librarians, which was, I think, a sci-fi channel show.
She's doing all right.
Chicago Fire, Continuum, Rush. She's been doing a shitload of TV since about 2014. She was in Rays, which, if that's the same Rays movie I'm thinking of, was a pretty
fun movie. I saw that with What's Her Face, the stunt woman.
Yeah, What's Her Face was awesome.
Zoe.
In that.
Zoe Bell.
Zoe Bell.
Well, yeah, What's Her Punch You in the Face. That's who that was that.
she did Conan, as we know.
Oh, she that's unfortunate.
Yeah, she was the co-lead. She was the lead woman for that film, lead actress, I should say.
I've never seen that, but I've heard nothing but bad things about it.
I don't see it on here. Oh, there it is.
It's right over above Criminal Minds.
Yeah, I got it.
Criminal Minds, right. I've watched a bit. I don't remember her on it.
All right, so Abe has joined us. Thank you, Abe. So a couple of quick things about this film. P2 is directed by Frank Calhoun, who's probably best known before this film as director of Amityville, The Awakening, the last film by the Weinstein brothers. And that's pretty much it. He did the Maniac film as well. He directed that film, which was the remake of the classic film starring
Maniac on the floor.
This is also co-written by Gregory Levasseur, who wrote Maniac, Piranha 3D, and directed the horror film The Pyramid from a couple years ago. Eric Feig is one of the producers, the American connection to this film, which mostly has French folk behind the scenes. Maxime Maxime Alexander is the cinematographer. He's a Walloon from Belgium, or Belgium, I should say. So that's basically a French-speaking Belgian person. He actually did the cinematography for a lot of big films recently, including Shazam, Crawl, The Nun, Annabelle Creation, among others. Tom and Dandy, or Tom and Dandy.
Tom and Dandy.
Tom and Dandy. It's a two-group musical people from New York City that basically directed the music for this film, and they've done a number since then as well, including 47 Meters Down, 47 Meters Down Uncaged, Sinister 2, the new Shudder film Haunt, among other films, Resident Evil, Retribution, and so on. Alexandra Aja is... that's right, he's one of the producers and the writer, co-writer of this film. He is well known for Piranha 3D, High Tension, the most recently, a couple of months ago, Crawl, and so forth. He's also from France.
That's the way, I like it. Yes.
There you go. All right, so that's the people behind the film. So I guess we can go around and discuss how we heard about this quote-unquote Christmas horror film. And, Abe, why don't we start with you? How did you hear about this, and what were your thoughts?
Well, I heard about it when we first decided that this would be our topic. I watched it actually 15 minutes ago. And honestly, overall, I thought it was a pretty good thriller. Well acted, it's tightly paced, had some pretty intense scenes. Honestly, that's kind of my initial impression just after finishing it. It'd be interesting, you know, imagine what it had, how it would have been if it's been like a 2019 film, how I would place it against films that just came out recently. And my memory's a little fuzzy about the films that came out around that time for comparison. Just, you know, how it stands amongst other slashers, you know, the past and now. Actually, it's more of a thriller, I would call it. Psychological thriller or something like that. I think I may have seen parts of this beforehand. I don't recall. But, yeah, it was overall it was a fun experience. And I guess I'll just get right into it when everyone gives their thoughts.
All right, very good. So, Mike, what about yourself? How did you hear about this film, and what do you think?
I don't remember. It's been 12 years. I don't remember catching it right away. I caught it later on cable, Netflix, something. Maybe I watched on DVD. I thought it was an effective thriller. I don't remember it being a Christmas film, you know, in terms of being advertised as a Christmas film. I'm a little sorry Chrissy's not here, so she could give us a rant as to how much she hates Elvis's version of Blue Christmas. Because I have a feeling she has a real stem winder in there concerning the topic. I think it had it come out. If we were doing Dark Discussions in 2007, and it only feels like we have, but we weren't, I think this would have been a strong contender for a top 20 list, although that really does look like a phenomenal year. 20 weeks later, The Mist, Wreck, what I think the first Paranormal Activity.
After Dark, Films to Die For,
Inside, Frontiers, Wrong Turn 2, Trick or Treat, Black Water. There was a lot of good movies that came out that year, and so I don't think this would have been on my top like five, but it would have almost certainly been in my top 20. Like I said, it's a solid, it's effective thriller. It's amazing to me that it's a film in a garage, in a parking garage, that goes almost 100 minutes, and yet I don't really ever find myself bored by it. I didn't find the setups too repetitive. You know, I think that it's a pretty smart little script for what they had. Now, I don't live in a large metropolitan area. I do not work in an office building, so I have no idea if the security issues of the film would have been accurate or even remotely plausible for 2007. So I can't judge it on that, you know. But I think they went out of their way to kind of make it plausible enough for this. I thought the performances are fine. That is one really – or it's actually one really fantastic kill. And it gives you another horror movie to watch at Christmas. I mean, if Die Hard counts as a Christmas movie, so does this.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, I actually didn't even know it existed until in 2007 I went to the After Dark Horror Film Fest, 8 films to die for that were playing in Methuen, Massachusetts at the time. And so me and a friend of mine went to see those films, and P2 happened to be there too. I was like, oh, what the heck's this? And then I looked it up, and I saw that it was another horror film. And I suggested to see it, but we just didn't have time. And so I didn't see it until it came out on VOD, because we already had our tickets to Lake Mungo and Mulberry Street and all those other films from the 8 films to die for. And so I watched it a couple years after it came out, or a year after it came out on disc, and I still have that disc. And yeah, it's a really solid horror film. You can call it a slasher, or you can call it a thriller or a psychological thriller, as Abe said. Roger Ebert gave it 3 out of 4 stars and felt it was a solid thriller with horror elements. It's a bottle film, so like Mike said, it only takes place in one area, and that's basically 4 levels of a parking garage and one. Actually 2 levels, her office floor, as well as the entrance of the office building that she works in, and it takes place in New York City. And that's it. And there's really just 2 leads and a handful of other characters that are in the film here or there, and that's about it.
Honestly, the other characters are more extras than anything else. It's like a 2-person performance.
Exactly, yeah. and a dog.
You know, here's one for you guys. If you want him to feel old.
Let Phil get through.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right, yeah, and then Eric has to give his thoughts too. I really like this film a lot. I became a big I was already kind of a big fan of Wes Bentley from his role in that classic film that was Kevin Spacey got the Academy Award, and what was it, American? You guys know the name of. Thank you, American Beauty. Yeah, I saw that film like 5 times at the theaters, and he was one of the stars of that film, and so I already liked him, so I thought he was going to be a big star after that film, and then after seeing Rachel Nichols in this film, I thought she was going to break out too, which she kind of did, but. I like the leads really well, and Mike mentioned there's a kill that's pretty impressive. So it has everything for pretty much everybody, and whatnot. So it's a high recommend for me, and I would agree with Mike that it would have been a top 20, if not even higher than that, for 2007 for horror. And I think the reason it's not known as well as it is, even though it has a lot of good people behind it, is because the production company that released it is kind of one of those smaller ones. So it wasn't like a Sony or Columbia or Warner Brothers picture. It was like Summit Films or something, you know, ones that you see every so often that just appear at theaters. It's a solid film and definitely could use a Scream Factory release, I think. Eric.
I honestly don't remember how I heard about this. I can't even honestly remember if I saw it in the theater. I may have rented it on Netflix disc subscription back in the day. I remember enjoying this movie a fair bit on first watch. I rewatched it again earlier today, and it's fine. Didn't strike me quite as well as it did the first time. But I think that's more about me than it is about the movie. I've watched a lot of horror movies between 2007 and now. So that might be part of it. So yeah, this movie's good. It's nothing completely original. You know, it's pretty much a standard stalker movie. However, I think part of what makes this movie work is the fact that our bad guy is just like, his behavior isn't outlandish, at least as, let me rephrase. His amplifier is similar to that of real people amplified by about, 500%.
I don't know if I'd go that high.
There are dudes out there that are like, the only reason she's not with me is because she hasn't noticed me. She's mine. She belongs to me. And it's really, it's kind of scary. And although I don't know of any instance where it's gone as far as it did in this movie, I wouldn't put money against it.
I don't know, maybe that far, but you know, yeah. Very, very close.
So the behavior of the antagonist in this movie comes from a very real place. And I think that's part of what makes this movie work so well.
Well, that's what happens when you listen to a lot of Elvis.
You could be right.
Don't fuck with the king.
So yeah, I like this movie. It didn't strike me quite as hard on a rewatch as it did on my initial watch, but I would still recommend it. And the two leads of the movie are quite good, and I think it has a very strong ending.
All right, very good.
I think this is it's a solid film. It's not. I think this is the kind of film that, if you have people who aren't like really into sick, disturbing horror, or who aren't deep horror veterans, but they're looking for a decent film to watch, a safe-ish horror film for Halloween, but they can do R-rated, this is a good one to recommend.
Mm.
I would say it has
like one majorly gory scene, and that's really it.
Yeah, well, but there's a lot of disturbing stuff too. Like,
oh yeah,
the video where she's watching herself, and you can guess that she probably was sexually assaulted.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's not a Splatterfest film.
Oh right, but the one scene that is gory is how
there are two very gory scenes.
Yeah, they still top, you know, slasher films that have a death every 10 minutes. These were pretty hardcore gore. So I think that's what you mean, Mike, right? That it's for a recommended audience because of that hardcore gore.
Right. If someone's willing to watch an R-rated horror film, right? There are people who don't like gore, you know, and because of the, I'm not sure what other scene Eric is talking about. I'm thinking of the one.
The dog.
It's a dog. You don't see much.
There's significant splatter.
But it's not like it's not even on the same level as the guy in the chair.
Yeah.
All right. If you guys don't think that counts as violence, that says more about you than it does.
Oh well,
about
you know
me.
Phil does. I'm amazed that Phil wanted to watch a movie about a dead dog.
Well, to be honest, I forgot about the dog and the chair, and then I rewatched it. And I go, oh my god, this is the film with the chair and the dog one. I completely forgot. Period. But anyway, continue.
Yeah, but I think Eric makes a point that we are now 12 years older. We've been doing a horror podcast for most of those 12 years.
It's 8 of them. Jesus.
75% of those 12 years we've been doing a horror podcast. And there has been because of the revolution in streaming services and the ability to provide us these, you know, without getting off our asses in the living room or bedroom, is we've had more access to more horror films than we've ever had before. So we've seen a lot more. We've seen no shortage of creepy man and girlfriend stories, right? I'm sure we have at least one of those on our top 20 lists every year.
Yep, I would say that.
So, yeah, I'm sure there's been ones that have been done as well, and probably ones that have probably been done better. But this is against a solid little entry. It doesn't push the envelope too much, which is why it's going to be fine for the people who aren't true horror fans and horror connoisseurs, you know, who feel that they need to see the next Serbian film with every rental.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mike. This would be a great horror movie for people that don't watch horror movies.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
But it would shock the hell out of them, unlike us.
Right. But even us, I think we can appreciate. If you're going into to be shocked, this won't shock you. If you're going into it to watch a tale told fairly well, I think this does it. It's a taut little thriller. You know, it moves pretty well. It is creepy.
Yes.
Wes Bentley is creepy. Congratulations on being a creep. I mean, there's no tubby time.
Not that.
Oh, yeah.
But he is still creepy, and he's effectively creepy in this role. It's a good villain role. And yeah, I like it. It's just one of those, for lack of a better term, it could be like a horror comfort film. You know, it's not going to challenge you too much.
It's a horror meatloaf sandwich.
Yeah.
Add some ketchup.
It's just one of those, oh, here's a nice film. Not one of those, oh, the best thing ever kind of thing. But
right.
Yeah. Hey, give it a shot. Give it a chance.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's pretty, pretty well stated, Mike. Yeah. I would call it a meatloaf sandwich at a high-end restaurant. That, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. So like, you know, these restaurants in New York City that you go in there and they sell the $30 hot dog.
I don't know, Phil.
I don't either, but I've seen it.
My wife would go mac and cheese, probably. Comfort food, mac and cheese.
That mac and cheese is a good comfort food, yeah.
It is.
Oh, and my wife has had some of those New York City restaurants, some actually very high-priced mac and cheese.
Oh, I'm sure. Everything in New York City is high-priced.
Yeah, so.
Indeed. All right, very well, very well. Before we start discussing some of the film and then throw the spoiler alert and discuss everything and anything, Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki! A businesswoman is pursued by a psychopath after being locked in a parking garage on Christmas Eve. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, yeah, it is, yeah, yeah. Which is an interesting wiki. I mean, it obviously says a lot, but you, I'm sure the trailer...
This is not a plot-heavy film.
Right. Well, what I mean is, when I rewatched the film recently, I would have not guessed what the film was about had I gone in completely blind until she actually gets attacked at the 20-minute mark.
I don't know, man. I like, it's pretty obvious that Wes Bentley is up to no fucking good.
Really? Eyebrows.
When he's quote unquote helping her try and start her car. That is not a really helpful person.
No, it's Abe has it. It's the eyebrows. Those are not good guy eyebrows.
The devil's eyebrows.
Oh, God bless you, Abe. That's the quote of the night. He's got the devil's eyebrows.
Eyebrows roared back. Roared over white.
Well, he is in New York City. He could have gone to a salon and got them trimmed a little bit.
Yeah, but what sort of person gets them trimmed to look like that? Can you make them into a permanent scowl, please? No, I'm perfectly fine. Why do you ask?
Well, and to be honest, I think that's partly why he's been, I guess, cast as a antagonist in a lot of films since his quote-unquote starring role of or breakout role of American Beauty, because he just has that look. I mean, you know, he's a nice guy and all that in real life, based off of what I've read. But he has a certain look that they go, oh, who can we get as the villain? Oh, well, let's look at the list, and his name is always on it for some reason.
You know what they call that list? That look, Phil?
What is that?
Pure evil.
Yes. Yeah. So he's got that look, which kind of gets him typecast, I guess.
And the thing is, if this film was released now, you know, you would end up getting, it would become a political cause. people complaining. It's just more feminist propaganda. And the other side, it's a whole Me Too. It'll be Me Too, the movie. But
yeah. I know, because when I was rewatching it, I was, you know, being, I guess, bombarded with these political things, Me Too's and all that other stuff from the past year and a half, 2 years, whatever it's been, since Weinstein, basically. It's hard not to view this film among any other film without, I mean, even the Satanic Panic, when we were watching the scene with Jerry Connell in that film, I was looking at it with that Me Too look, because we've been brainwashed in a sense, and this film, it's interesting how it
well, if there's
great when it first came out. And now.
It's interesting, too, because, you know, for a film with this kind of, that could be viewed in this kind of lens to now, it's kind of strange, especially when how they film Rachel Nicole's in a lot of scenes, you know, especially her, the dress she's in most of the time. So it's kind of strange, you know?
Well, and if there was ever a character that could be tagged as an incel psychopath, it would be this dude, right?
Yeah, because when this film came out, the word incel probably didn't even exist yet.
It probably, I don't know when that came into use, but
yeah,
you could be right.
Right, exactly.
Let's find out.
Yeah.
If only I was sitting in front of a device that could somehow get me that information.
Yeah, so I thought it was funny looking at this up. One of the things they mention about this, ooh, the term incel was started in 1993 when a Canadian university, fucking Canadian,
it's the Canadian, Phil,
by her first name, created a website to discuss her sexual inactivity with others. So it started with a woman. A woman started the term incel. Oh my god.
Dun, dun, dun.
There's an ironic twist.
For folks who don't know what the term means, because I mean, I only found out what it meant when there was like that kid in San Francisco or wherever the hell it was.
The driver, right? The guy who's driving. Yeah. Went fucking nuts. Yeah, that's the thing where most of us heard it.
Yeah.
And so that's led to a terrible, terrible stereotype of incels.
Don't get defensive, Mike.
Yeah. But I thought it was funny watching, like I said, looking at this, like the movie up on Wikipedia, and they said that it was heavily advertised on MySpace.
There you go.
Where a trailer for the film could also be streamed if you had 3 hours to wait.
Wow.
Olden times. It's 12 years. That's how old the film is. So, that is a curiosity, though, how the film plays today. And it actually plays the same, except, like you said, Mike, people could look at it like, I guess, woman power and all this other stuff.
I don't know that you would have her apologizing for Jim.
Yeah, right. The guy in the chair. Right? Yeah.
Or not taking a shot at him with the flashlight.
Right.
I think there's a lot of that would have played very differently. I don't know if it would have been any more or less correct, because I think part of the horror is the fact that the guy really, well, the guy was a perv.
Never mind.
And he was married, you know, but he was drunk and he made a pass and was shot down, and it didn't seem to go any further than that.
Right.
And he did apologize.
And he did apologize.
It seemed like a heartfelt apology as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying he did anything right or that it was wrong if she chose to hold a grudge. I'm just saying he
certainly didn't deserve to die.
No.
This isn't Harvey Weinstein jerking off into a potted plant.
Right.
No, at first I was wondering, you know, like, okay, this is a kind of interesting little moment here, but, you know, I was curious to know where that was going until I figured out, we see it becomes kind of like a trigger point for Thomas's character, because he doesn't decide to really act until after that incident.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, that's a good question. We don't know, right? Because it all just takes place in an 8-hour period, so we don't know what happened prior. Well,
because he had the videotape and everything like that.
He had the videotape of the incident on the elevator. He didn't know that he'd apologized.
No, but I'm saying the attack was what triggered everything from that point on for Thomas to make a move.
Maybe.
Well, because he thought he was helping, and he'd think, hey, if I stand up for this girl who was assaulted, I get some romantic points or something. In his own twisted way.
Maybe.
I mean, I was thinking that it may have been he was waiting for New Year's Eve. I mean, Christmas Eve anyway, because this movie takes place literally a few hours before Christmas Eve. And so that just was coincidence. I thought that the guy had made a pass at our lead actress character, and it was just coincidence. But you're saying that it could have been
a triggering point.
The trigger. I don't know.
You know, I mean, because, you know, he sets his entire thing, the dinner and everything like that, but he's just like, I need something special for it, you know? I mean, because, but again, we don't know how long he's been in the security job for.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue against it, but I didn't particularly pick up on it either.
Right, same here, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it seems legit, though I didn't think of it myself, is all I'm saying. So just to do a little setup here, basically P2 stands for Parking Garage Level 2, so that's why the film's called P2. So our lead character, played by Rachel Nichols, she is named Angela. She's working late at New York City, has a window office, so she's got a pretty decent job. Don't know actually what she does, to be honest. And she is getting ready to visit her parents and siblings for a Christmas Eve dinner. And it appears that she kind of blows them off a lot based off of some phone calls. So she really wants to make it and celebrate Christmas Eve with her extended family or immediate family because she's not married. And yet she's still working a little late, but she's planning to leave directly from the office to, I think, New Jersey, where her family is celebrating at the mother's and father's home. That's pretty much the setup, right? I mean,
yeah. It's okay. A very straightforward plot, but it is done well.
Right. And while she's working late, as we discussed, this guy, Jim, enters her office to apologize for misbehaving. In other words, making a pass at her at a prior Christmas party, probably from a day or two ago, is my guess. Because he's obviously at work now and he's not drunk, because the incident occurred when he was intoxicated at a party at work where he made a pass at her, even though he's married with a family. And obviously that's bad, but as Eric said, he deserved to die, and he did apologize and whatnot. So that's all I got. Anything else anybody want to bring up?
You know, I always find it interesting in stories like this, and like I said, we've seen more than a few of these. They seem so, the guys often seem so clueless as to anything that they're doing is wrong, perplexed why they don't just fall in love with the guy,
right.
And yet are self-aware enough not to let the cops know that there's some, that she's there.
Right.
You know,
I knocked you out and chained you in a chair. Why don't you love me?
Yes, and they talk like, oh, and we'll be so happy together. It'll be great. We won. And then, no, you can't call anybody. But I'm not saying that. I don't know how these people are in actual life, and God knows human beings are not always the most logically consistent human beings, especially the crazy ones. I just... I just, it's just an odd behavioral quirk that certainly has been in many of the other films, but for whatever reason while watching it, just brings that in my mind.
To beat Phil before he gets here, this guy is not a behavioral health individual. This guy is a wackadoodle.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I've discussed, and this is where I found it out, was I read Truman Capote's In Cold Blood, and they talk about mental illness in that, and he shows the difference between mental illness based off of what the medical community considers mental illness versus what regular people and the government. And basically, if you're a sociopath or a psychopath, even though you're considered mentally ill by the mental health community, the government and most people will not consider you mentally insane or damaged or whatnot, because even though you don't have feelings, you do have the knowledge to know what is right and wrong compared to people who have like schizophrenia or whatnot who are truly mentally ill.
So I'm just thinking, like, if this was Family Feud, it would be like, you know, we asked 100 people to respond to survey. How would you describe? Okay, how would you describe the villain in this film? And the number one answer is fucking nuts. I think that was the correct answer.
Fucking death.
Survey says wackadoodle.
Number two answer.
Yeah, he is.
Number five might be mentally ill individual.
No, he's
behavioral health individual.
No, he's downright daffy. He's fucking out of his goddamn mind. I mean, even the moments when he tries to act normal, he always seems like he's teetering on the fucking edge in his way he talks stuff.
Well, let's just put it this way. He looks at this Jim guy as the Antichrist because Jim made a pass at the girl he quote unquote loves, which happens to be Angela. And yet what Tom does
is way worse.
Is way worse because
how
not
dare
only,
you take a pass at the girl that I'm going to rape later tomorrow.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. He probably raped her and he thinks that's okay. And yet he looks at Jim as an evil person for just basically making a pass at her. So
yeah.
So we can say that this guy is friggin', or as Mike said, fucking nuts.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Well, probably the best illustration of that is right before the guy in the chair bites it, when they're in the car there.
Well,
that's really when it's strongly illustrated that this guy's just out of his mind.
Yeah.
Right. So let's set it up how she meets Tom, the security guard, and all that. So I guess we'll throw up the spoiler and discuss everything and anything. Since this was a low-profile film since its release, a lot of folks may have not seen it. You can VOD it pretty much anywhere for rental. Vudu actually has it for free if you're okay with watching a few commercials, but it is uncut, so it's not like it's a cut version like the olden days on regular TV. But again, it's VOD everywhere, and you can buy there's no Blu-ray, but except in the European market, but in the US or North America, you can get it for $6 DVD. So she heads down to her car doesn't work. And so she goes to the security guard in the garage and, asks him to basically get her an Uber or a taxi at that time, I guess. And he instead says, no, let me try to jumpstart your car. And this is where he tries to do it. It doesn't work. And he says a couple of creepy things, but you could it could go over your head if you're not really paying attention. That's pretty much just the setup. And she can't get out of the building because what is it? The upstairs in the lobby, you have to press a buzzer behind the desk to open the door. And you have to hold the buzzer. It's not one of those buzzers where you press it and then you get like 12 seconds and then you can go do it. So she can't get out that way because the security guard on the
Robbie has disappeared.
Gee, I wonder what happened to him.
Right. Don't and try. So she has to go back down, and she can't find Tom. And then at the 20-minute mark, after falling in the garage, the lights get shut off, and she's locked in the garage because the grates are everywhere because it prevents homeless people from getting into the garage. So you have to press this button to get or use a key to open the grates, but she doesn't have the key. And so she's trying to find the security guard. She trips. She hurts herself. She's, you know, it's getting stressed. She's going to get late for her parents and disappoint them and all that. And then at the 20-minute mark, she is incapacitated by chloroform or something. And we know exactly who it is because they show Tom as the villain.
And the eyebrows.
The devil's yes. Eyebrows.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, he has one other thing is he has his Rottweiler there too. And that's pretty much it. She wakes up chained to a table in, the security guard, room with like a turkey or ham dinner in front of her because he's trying to celebrate Christmas Eve with a dinner as if she's his girlfriend. And she also discovers that she has been changed into a dress for like a cocktail party. So obviously he had taken her clothes off or something because why would she have it?
Or he has little helper elves that did it.
Well, we find out later what actually happened. But so she knows she's in trouble, and she knows that this guy's a psycho at this point.
And I really did like the little slow escalation of everything. You know, the situation becomes more and more chaotic as it goes along. And it's, you know... And, you know, Angela's behavior is understandable initially. She's trying to appease to him and just keep herself alive because she recognizes quickly this guy is, you know, nuts. She's already, you know, it doesn't take, you know, you're just starting from right off the bat. But, you know, no matter what reason she tries to use does any good because this guy has his own sort of reality around him about how he sees everything.
I think the clinical term again for that is wackadoodle. Or yes. Fucking nuts.
Right. Yeah, he's definitely unhinged. And she knows it, and she knows the situations she's in. So obviously she's in panic mode. Most likely her heart's beating like crazy, but she keeps her cool because, as Abe said, she has to play along with this guy's game to basically survive. And obviously she wants to survive. And I think she has something else going for her too, which is not only just a normal surviving, but she really had an important engagement with her family too. And if Chrissy was here, she would be talking about how conflict, change, whatever it's called, where we have a character that seems kind of self-centered.
Character conflict change, Phil.
Yeah, so she's
crisis
a self-centered
conflict change.
Yeah, she's not she's a likable character at the beginning, but you can also tell that she is kind of self-centered.
All the time.
Yeah, and all this other stuff. And so we're figuring by the end of the movie, she does have that crisis, whatever change thing.
Conflict.
Change. Yeah, conflict change thing. So the film really is set up and written that way. And so even though she's in dire straits, she's oddly growing at the same time as a human being, and putting her life in perspective, as she basically sees her life possibly ending.
Angela's Wackadoodle Christmas.
That's right. Yeah. True. That dinner looked pretty good, though.
I guess so. For a microwave dinner, that was not bad.
And that certainly will forgive a multitude of sins.
Yeah. Except for Elvis. You can never forgive that.
And the whole, kidnapping thing.
Yeah.
I was fine with that. Look, some girls are into that.
Oh, dear.
All right.
All hate mail to co-host Mike. Please. What do they say for commentaries? All commentaries and whatnot are only those of the director and not of the Sony Pictures or whatever.
Phil told me to say that earlier.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure I did. All right. So, yeah. So that's how she wakes up. And she obviously, as Abe said, she's playing a game to survive. So, with that stated, what do we want to discuss next? How do we want to talk about it? I guess, was there anything big that happened prior to him showing her the video of Jim and wanting to do what you were going to talk about, Eric, with all how he goes nuts in the car, and we can talk about that? I guess we can just jump onto that, and if we think of something else, we can always come back to it.
Yeah, the thing is there's not a whole lot of, like I said, there's not a whole lot of plot to this movie. It's just things happening, because the plot is pretty darn straightforward.
Right. So yeah, let's talk about him being wacky in the car.
come on, boys will be boys.
Well, all right. So he does. I had to step away for a moment. Did you already talk about that video, Phil?
No, because that actually comes later. You mean the one where he probably raped her, or the one where?
No, that one. The one where he shows the other guy making the pass at her.
No. We didn't really talk about that. Go ahead.
Well, so Wackadoodle shows her a security video of the elevator when that other guy made a pass at her. I think it was the night before. And apparently he takes great offense to the fact that he made a pass at her and seems to be way more upset about it than she is. And then I don't know if there was anything between the showing of the video and the actual event in the car, but they end up out in a parking garage, and he takes her to where he's got the guy tied up to an office chair with wheels, and he drives her up there and gives her a heavy flashlight and wants her to go just bludgeon the guy with it. She's like, I don't want to do that. And he's like, why not? He made a pass at you. You think he can just touch anybody and get away with it? And she's like, he apologized. And she keeps on calling him Thomas. And this is what I was talking about when he really shows his true colors here at the car, because she calls him Thomas a couple times and he totally snaps on her and goes, I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to humanize yourself to me by using my name. I get it. Stop saying my name. Stop it. Stop it. She's like, Jesus Christ, dude. Take a pill.
I bet I know who called him Thomas.
Yeah.
Mommy. His mommy.
Mommy. So he's having some type of breakdown, and she doesn't want any part of torturing this guy. And he's like, fine, I'll do it. So he goes out there and pulverizes the guy's face with the flashlight, and then comes back to the car, where she's upset about it, and then decides that the best thing to do is to kill the guy. So he uses the car to smush the guy in the chair against the wall of the parking garage. Yeah, it's a pretty it's a pretty good kill, because I think it's what, 3 hits he takes to totally pulverize this guy against the cement wall. It's pretty brutal.
Oh yeah, it's shocking. I mean, it's, even though like Abe said, there's only one or two or a handful of real violent scenes, you know, horror type violence scenes, not psychological thriller scenes, but actual gore scenes. They're pretty intense. This one's like crazy. I mean, this would have been the kill of the year probably, right, Mike, if we were doing the podcast in 2007?
It would have been up there. Maybe. Well, I mean, 2007, again, like The Mist or Inside. Yeah.
Frontiers, Jesus Christ.
I never got to see those ones, but except for The Mist, but I heard about certain scenes, so no way. I think it would be up there, though.
Oh, yeah, I mean, nothing quite defined that year so much as Inside redefined the concept of scissors, but
yeah. But yeah, you're right. So generally, any other year, it probably would have been killed.
Any other year,
it was absolutely would be a contender.
Yeah, because not only is the guy hit by the car and his guts pop out and he's still alive, but then. Yeah, his head gets squashed too. It's just horrific.
That's pretty awesome.
He fucking pops his whole gut just pop right out of his gut.
Yeah. I mean, and it wasn't like because he was cut. You know, usually when you see someone's guts coming out, it's because they've been stabbed. Here, it's because it's like a balloon, a water filled balloon, and you squeeze it, and eventually it just pops. And that's basically what happens when this guy gets hit by the car.
Just use some duct tape. He'll be fine.
There you go. Duct tapes can be used for everything, right? Including holding in your intestines.
Yep.
So yeah, Eric, as you said it was awesome. Yeah. If you're a gore fan, it was awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah. So what we saw in the car is basically. That's the proof right there. So how he acts in the car, crazy. This actually shows that, okay, he is crazy. And I felt that was ramped up this film big time, because originally you just think he's crazy and he has her tied up and all that, but you think you could probably reason with him maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're friends and this, and then maybe we'll go, oh, right. At least I had that. And then again, it's a horror film, so obviously I should have.
And then Thomas's Park grew two sizes large.
Yeah. And then when he basically kills the guy, she now knows that, okay, she's really in danger if she doesn't play along to his insanity. But you got to give her credit. Instead of playing along, she bolts.
Oh, yeah, she managed to get the fuck out of there, but it was like, oof, the damage is already done. Oh.
And I got to give her credit for she's fairly clever for her position in this
movie. Oh,
yeah. So she takes off her shoes because not only did... Well, no, that's not true. I mean, basically what happens is since she has heels on, that isn't going to work. So she bolts shoeless. And then I liked how they had her escape, where instead of running around the loops, she instead goes through the barriers and jumps down.
Yeah.
And I thought that was cool because it made it not only more realistic that she was able to get away quicker, but it also was the smart thing to do for someone that's trying to survive. And this being four levels plus at least one level lobby, and I don't even know if she can get to the lobby anymore. Because
she can't.
At that point, you need a key to get back into the building. But either way, you have four levels of the parking garage. They're huge. because it's probably like a whole block of New York City, the parking garage.
Right, she refers to it as the, I don't remember what it was, the something building, which would imply that it's a like the Chrysler building or some sort of landmark building in New York City, right, as opposed to just for, like when she's calling for help.
Right.
You know, I can't remember how they call it, but, you know, I'm at the Aztec building, whatever it is. So it'd be like saying Chrysler building, Flatiron building, something like that.
Right, right. Everybody would know it that lives in the city.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and those type of buildings have huge parking garages. So, and then even though it's quite empty, there's still a good number of cars that she can hide under or whatever, and stuff. So she has options to basically try to wait it out. But again, it's going to be tough, right? Because she has all the next day, which is Christmas, and no one's going to be coming to the building. So she's literally in trouble for not just until the morning, but probably until, 36 hours later. All right. So what do we want to talk about next?
I do like how, even though it's sort of in the office building, they utilize a number of areas of the building for some interesting scenes. Like the elevator where she tries to hold out, and Thomas gets flooded with using a fire hose.
Now there's one nitpick I want to mention in this movie. It's generally done very well, but I started thinking about this because at one point she actually gets an axe, right, a fire axe out of the glass case on the wall. And I was thinking if there's a fire axe on the wall, wouldn't there be also a fire alarm on the wall that she could pull to perhaps, I don't know, summon help?
Not if the camera doesn't focus on it.
Well, here's the thing, though. At the very end of the movie, after the sprinkler system goes off, they show her running away up the stairs past a fire hose. And right next to the firewall, I paused it to make sure I wasn't hallucinating it. Right next to the fire hose on the wall is a fire alarm. She could have pulled the fucking fire alarm the whole time. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out.
I think she is a fairly – in order for her to be successful in the business she's in, she's got to be fairly bright. She is a smart character, but she's under a lot of stress. Okay?
I'm just saying. She could have pulled the fire alarm the whole time.
That rented car is coming out of her Christmas bonus.
So sometimes you overlook the little things.
Well, Eric, yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. Obviously, there would be no movie if
right
that happened.
I know this, but I'm just saying.
Right. No, but it is a valid point. Now, next time I rewatch this film, I'll be saying, she could have just pulled the fire alarm. You ruined it for her.
Well, I mean, my thing is, I do think she is fairly smart through out a lot of this.
She's very resourceful. She is.
I think her stabbing him with the fork wasn't a bad idea. But it's that
timing wasn't good. But
well, the timing wasn't good, and it's that old nobody finishes off. Right? She stabs him and lets go. No,
right,
keep stabby, dig a hole in his back.
Right. Poke his eye out. Right then, yeah.
That's a new quote for the day.
Just go to town. Make it hurt. Not make it ooey, you know, ouch. You know, go. I mean, I understand maybe she's not big on anatomy. She clearly went to some school to study money stuff, right? You know, and not things that like would help her body function or something. So maybe she doesn't know where all the weak points are. So yeah, stabbing on your shoulder blade maybe not be the best place to do real damage, but it's a start.
Yeah.
Just go for the eyebrows.
Go for the eyebrows.
Go for the eyebrows. They're a source of power.
Don't stab them till you see the black of the brows. Oh God. Yeah, just stab. Just don't stop stabbing until he's dead. Because it's not like he's not going to be able to, like, because she didn't stab him in the leg. So right. He's clearly going to be able to catch up with her when she has a chance to chase her down.
Yep. Well, that's true, Mike. I mean, a lot of times we've discussed in previous films, even if we've liked the films, when we've reviewed them for this podcast, we've mentioned the moment the villain goes down, you make sure they never get back up again.
Oh, yeah. I've explained that to my wife, that if she ever has to put somebody down that's not me, you just keep beating the crap out of them.
Yeah.
If it's you, then she should start monologuing.
Yes. That's it. Tell me your evil scheme.
Yeah, do the James Bond thing to you.
Get the slowest moving laser that you can possibly find.
I just rewatched Moonraker the other night. Don't even get me started. Let's move on with this movie.
We shall kill you by anaconda.
We need sharks with friggin' laser beams on their head.
And that's why God gave us Aquaman.
No, seriously, in Moonraker, the bad guy has 7 chances to kill Bond. 7 of them. It's ridiculous. Okay, moving on.
My first James Bond film was Moonraker at the Theaters. And I enjoyed it tremendously. So this one here, yeah. So she stabs him with the fork, and that was actually pretty good. She escapes again because she does get caught a number of times by him. Because again, even though it is a pretty large parking garage, it's still a parking garage. She can't get out. So if he's a stalker and she's one to flee, obviously, it's not going to be good for her necessarily. And then also, fortunately for her, he doesn't want to, at least he doesn't want to kill her. He just wants to use her as a sex slave, I guess. That's all I can think
of. Yeah, I guess that's so, the best term to use.
Yeah, so.
No, I think what he actually wants is for her to fall in love with him. He's just very, very, very confused about how that works.
This reminds me of it was about the girl being trapped in the sanitarium. What was it? We did recently.
What film is that?
It was when he she gets trapped in the sanitarium. She keeps thinking she's seeing the guy stalking her in there.
Oh, Unsane?
Unsane. It reminds me of that in which the stalker puts the girl on a pedestal and almost makes them an idol in a way. They seem as a very almost super like superstar kind of godlike stature that has to be pure, is always virtuous and everything like that. But they don't really know anything about the real person.
Well,
that's a fair point.
There's a lot of very male stuff in that character, just very skewed. Whether it's the putting the woman on a pedestal, or trying to protect the woman, right? You know, trying to protect her against the guy. Yeah, from Jim. I do want to get back to Jim. Did anyone notice something I've always thought was funny? I understand the reason for it is how in films, what was it? The Pack of Sam's? What was it that was in
The something of Sam's, satanic panic.
Nobody,
The Code of Sam's.
Is that nobody in movies ever has the same name? Right? Like we've been through, we're now on 10 seasons of Walking Dead. I don't think any two characters were named Bill. You know, it's every, you know, there's never been another character named Rick, you know, no matter how many dozens of people have been on the show. So, and yet you have Jim, the pervy guy in the office. And Jimmy is her nephew. I'm hoping they're not the same person. All right, she's got on the phone when you hear her calling that her nephew is named Jimmy. And I just thought that was a weird thing to do. To have her nephew be named after the guy that was trying to grope her in the elevator.
That is an interesting thing because I've read and Abe probably has too, because Abe likes writing fiction as well, where I've read that intentionally not name characters the same in fiction. So, like you said, Mike, there wouldn't be confusion or
it's easy to keep straight.
Otherwise, you're trying to figure out which Sam is who. Like if you're writing a book and you have two Sams within the same story and they might be close in proximity to each other and maybe share a scene, then you're constantly trying to figure out which Sam is speaking and stuff like that. And you might need to use a different moniker or something like that to try to differentiate them.
It's easier if you're writing fantasy novels like R.A. Salvatore. You can just take a string of letters and throw a couple apostrophes in there and it's a name.
Like the guys who did the music for this movie.
Yeah. No apostrophes. That's just a bunch of letters thrown together.
Yeah.
That's why I'm thinking, I mean, were they trying to make a statement here or trying to say something by making the two, or is it just a really weird oversight?
That's a really good question, Mike. Yeah, I mean, if Chrissy was here, she would answer it for us. Chrissy would know what.
Now, Chrissy would still be talking about Blue Christmas.
or conflict change. Or whatever. But Crisis, conflict, change. But
is anything in this movie Poe-esque?
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Well, Casavant Montalique Tato, whatever that guy's name is, there's somebody who was kidnapped and locked up and chained to a wall. She was chained to a desk and kidnapped.
Well, Mike, the Jimmy on the phone could have been the first beat of the three beat.
No, we'd already seen. Because I noticed because Jim had already apologized to her.
Oh yeah,
that's why you suck at this. Let's move on.
Yeah,
fair enough. So, but yeah, that is a good point, Mike. Maybe they just didn't even think of it, like you said. But I don't think there was any reason except they just probably just didn't think of it. But
well, I mean, there is a sorta kinda theme here about the importance of like. Personal connection and family, and this one guy who clearly is completely cut off from any sort of appropriate human contact.
That's true.
Possibly by court order. You know, and that it's important for her perhaps to not spend time. It's not a fully fledged or fully formed idea. This isn't like a Hallmark movie about the hardworking businesswoman who goes back to life in the country and finds a man to. You know, I don't know, whatever. But it's so there is something to that there, but it's not so fleshed out. I mean, are they trying to say she should have gone with the guy, the lech in the elevator, because he was like her family? I don't know. I just thought it was a weird thing. Anyway, if anyone has any thoughts, please let us know because I've got nothing.
No, it was just a good observation or point out or talking point. And with no answer, maybe. All right. So what did you think of that? Because when she was on the phone, her parents, you hear in the background saying, there she goes again doing that. I think, do you think they, meaning the screenwriters, wanted us to kind of not like her character at the beginning?
No, I think they wanted to, give some background sketch of her personality, and B, kind of paint out that nobody would really ask that many questions if she didn't show up.
Okay, yeah, right. Yeah, and also it shows another reason why she's late, because there's no reason for her to have to stay that late. Right. I mean, if she had just left at 5 like everybody else, she wouldn't have been in that predicament.
That is true.
Well, yeah. Like, and also, weirdly enough, I just had this conversation with someone who asked me, he's like, you know, your car's always here when I leave. Why are you here so late? But the fact that she's always the last one out of the building or she's a workaholic tells, is it Tom? Tim or Tom?
Tom is the West Bentley character. Right.
So tells Tom that he can plan this. Of course, he knows she'll be the last person down. Right?
That's a good point, Mike. Yeah.
So that's a part of it.
That's true.
The fact that nobody will miss her is a part of it. I think the fact that she doesn't really have a social life she doesn't have anybody is part of what attracts him to her. Because he also doesn't have a social life for a completely different reason.
Right.
But they're both two lonely souls in this great big city. And they're
going to find that lonely. She seems okay with her position.
Well, but look at from his position.
His position is as a raving lunatic.
Exactly.
Whack-a-doodle.
Well, what I think Mike means is he's antisocial disorder. So he doesn't going to have many friends anyway because most people can look at him and say, this guy's a weirdo. But what he sees of her is a woman that has no significant other, no family, no connections except for her computer at her desk. And so he's thinking, she's lonely just like me. I think that's what you mean, right, Mike?
Right. If she was normal and well-adjusted, like, what's her name, Judy, or whatever her name was at the beginning of the film, then when she tried to pull that, my boyfriend's going to be looking for me and he's going to be mad thing at the beginning of the film, that would have had more plausibility. Whereas here, he's going, yeah, no, I'm not buying it. You're just a spinster in training here.
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly. If Judy, the secretary, if he had done this to her, he probably would have believed that the boyfriend will notice that she's gone because she has generally on what some folks would say the standard 20-something-year-old lifestyle. Well, Angela doesn't, and he knows it. And so when she tries to pull that nonsense with him, that yeah, my boyfriend's going to be looking for me. He knows right away. And based off of what you said, Abe, he may have been watching her for a while and planning this. And so he may have been following.
Oh yeah, I mean he would have to consider since he waited till this very day of the year where everyone was gone to try to make this move. He had everything. He had the dress. He had the food. He had this entire thing planned out. You know, this guy was built up this fantasy that everything was going perfect if he pulled it off.
All right, and Mike, you were the one that said that he knew that she always worked late, last person out of the building, and all. So he's probably been watching her for a while.
Yeah, and a little creepy that he knew her size. Just saying.
I felt that way too. Yeah.
As a dude, I've got no clue. I don't have any idea what those numbers mean.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I would have had no idea either. And the thing here about this guy, too, is doing it and deciding to, I guess, cross over that line. Because prior to that, whatever sick thoughts he had, they were private and he's guilty of nothing except for sick thoughts. But the moment he does action, he's now basically going for broke, right? Because, I mean, if he's willing to kill Jim, if he's willing to flood an elevator, if he's willing to lie to cops, and on, you can gather that he was planning to go out. He may have expected himself not even to make it. He was just wanted to make sure that he had her approval to have sex with her. And then if he dies or not, it didn't matter to him.
Yeah, I was wondering what his end game was this whole time because really, even if you're crazy, I just don't understand how you see that going well, and even if it did, like I'm pretty sure he'd already tied that guy to a chair and killed the other security guard. So it's still not going to end well for him, no matter what happens.
Did you ever see the Underwear Gnomes episode of South Park?
Oh yeah, yes.
Where they steal the underpants and it's like their plan to get rich and their plan is step one, steal the underpants. Step two, something happens. Step three, money. That's the plan. Step one, kidnapper. Step two, something happens. Step three, happily ever after.
Yeah,
have a big habit of glossing over that middle, the part where all the work gets done.
Right.
Right.
I don't understand in any way how this plan ever would have worked out for him.
Well, that's why I'm thinking.
Even if she was on board the whole time, even if she wakes up chained to that chair and says, "Oh, thank God, I thought you'd never notice me," it's still not going to work out for him.
Because
he already killed the other security guard.
Right.
Do we know when he killed the other security guard?
I'm pretty sure it's immediately because she's trying to get a hold of that other security guard when the cab goes
up. He was at his desk when she looked for him.
Yeah. So I was curious too. What was his end game? Did he just want to basically have her say yes, I love you, now have passionate sex with me, and that's it? And then once that happened, it didn't matter, and nothing else mattered.
Die a happy man.
Yeah,
he can that's blow all up a bang.
I mean,
yeah, I.
Boo.
Yeah, actually, I think that you got to remember that people don't usually commit crimes with the thought, and then when I get caught.
Right.
So this guy obviously had some delusions of grandeur, and probably thought that, you know, he was too clever, and nobody would know he's the one that ran over the guy in the chair, or nobody would know he's the one that killed the security guard, because he's just that good.
It was all just a horrible coincidence that happened while it was his shift.
Yes.
They're alone.
No, he would just get fired for incompetence.
Right. There's that one moment in the movie where he yells at you, "What are you gonna get me fired? Is that what you want?" Like, no, I think we're a little past that here, dude.
Oh God.
Now let's talk about the video. So while he's out searching for her, she gets back to the security guard room, and there's a video plan of and the thing is that you kind of already knew something was bad happened, because if she's dressed in a new dress and whatnot, obviously he took off her clothes and he put on new clothes, and we see a video of basically her unconscious during that time when she had been chloroformed, and him being this disgusting pervert, like putting on lipstick on her and all this other stuff. And so the first time I watched it, I just thought, oh my God, that's terrible. But the second time I watched it, which was just the other day, I was like, oh my God, he probably raped her. What did you guys think? It's ambiguous enough.
Implied, but I understand why you think that.
I think it probably. I don't know that it would have been rape. As my wife will attest, I maybe don't know.
Molestation, definitely, because we saw that on the video.
Yeah, as my wife will attest, I may not know much about female anatomy, but I have to think that if he had raped her, that maybe she would have had a sense of something having happened while she was passed out. I mean, it couldn't have been that long she was passed out. But yeah, something like, you know, some touching, some poking, some sniffing, that I could definitely see, like something out of a Japanese porn film. Maybe some tentacle sex. I don't know.
Oh dear.
Well, I will say I enjoyed the scene when the cops showed up. That was pretty well done and suspenseful. With them coming in to look around and him desperately trying to get the hell out of there before she makes enough noise for them to notice.
Right, and what I liked about it is that they showed up.
Yes.
Right? Is that they do the thing with the phone, and it works!
Yeah.
And it actually works. And there are a lot of little clever bits in this film that pay off. They don't necessarily pay off as you expect. And there's one that comes up at the end that I'll point out later. But it works. It was, like I said, and you're worried, is he going to try to kill the cops, which would be really stupid? Or is she going to make some noise? Yeah, exactly. Where is exactly is this going to go? Because I didn't know.
Right. And the cops don't just do the routine. Like, someone called us, and whatnot. And he says, yeah, everything's fine. And they say, all right, no problem. They say they want to check things out. And he has no problem because he pretty much thinks she's incapacitated. And everything is legit. Like, for example, when he starts closing the gate again behind the cops, you're thinking, okay, the cops are going to get killed. But then the cops look at, like, why is he closing the gate? And then he says, there's a lot of homeless people around here, and if I don't close the gate, you know what'll happen, basically, which is, you know, the homeless people will sneak in and whatever. And so, yeah, exactly. Use the place as a toilet. And it makes sense. All of it makes sense. And so it's really like 6 to 8 minutes of, like you said, Mike, and you said, Eric, will she make a noise and they know she's there, or will he be forced to kill them or not, whatnot. And so you get this 8 minutes of, like, what's going to happen? You know, you still have 30 minutes of the film. So you're thinking, okay, these cops are gone. And yet it ends more realistic than a regular horror film, which is they don't find her, they don't get killed, and it's just 8 minutes of them searching while he's, meaning Tom, but he's making sure that she's quiet because she locked him in a trunk of a car. And he's concerned, and, you know, the cops could see the blood stain where he killed Jim and on, and all the things that happen that a horror movie would usually happen, like, for example, Aha wrote Crawl, and the cops in that get eaten by the alligator, right? I mean, here you would think the cops would be killed by the villain, and instead, no. And it's just 8 minutes of them searching, him hoping.
That's,
yeah, go on.
I was scratching my head where they were at the site where the guy got run over, but they didn't see any blood.
Well, he cleaned it up, and then what he did was, well, yeah, he cleaned up the ground, and he moved the body, as we know. And then he used what are those things that in warehouses that you put, like, things on top of, the, you know, the wooden boards?
Oh, the skids. The pallets, yeah.
The pallets. Yeah.
Oh,
so
that's
he takes
right.
a bunch
that's
of pallets, and he puts them against a wall to cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's why the cops don't see the damage to the wall and any guts on the wall. So that explains that, Abe. Even though, yeah, I could see why you were confused.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
But yeah, I don't know what he does with the body and the because it's gone.
Well, now that he's lost the girl, what do you think he did with the body?
I know what he did. That's disgusting. He probably just put, I mean, they don't show it, but you can just assume that he tossed it in a trunk or something of a car or something. But
I think Mike's got the right idea.
Well, there's even other suspenseful things, too. When the cops leave, they run over the cell phone that she called 911 in the first place.
Yep.
So you think that maybe they're going to stop and hear and say, what's this? And nope, they don't.
Well, no, and really the lesson is don't use the Nextel, because that's why she got in trouble.
Ba-dum-bum.
I just started laughing when I saw Nextel on the screen of her phone. I was like, oh my God, Nextel. I remember Nextel.
Yeah, they're out of business now, I think, right?
Yeah, they got acquired by Sprint. They were a piece of shit.
There you go.
They were those annoying ones that had the walkie-talkie feature.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So the bleep. Yeah, in the middle of the store. Mainly assholes bought them.
Right, right. I remember the advertisements for those on TV. A buddy of mine wanted me to get one. I was like, I don't know about that. I didn't get a cell phone probably for a few years after that, too. Well, no, actually, no. I probably just got it at that point. Yeah. Yeah, I did. Let's see. What other things do we want to talk about? After the cops, she finally gets out of the car trunk, and she's about to try to scream for the cops because she makes it to P1. But he releases the hounds. Release the hounds, Smithers.
Yes. And the hound. Well, I gotta say, like, she runs away and she gets a crowbar. She had a crowbar from the trunk she was in. She smashes the window of a car and then opens the door and gets into the window with the gets into the car with a window that she just smashed. And I'm like, that's not how to hide from a dog. What the fuck are you doing? It's just gonna jump right through that window, and that's what happens.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when I was thinking what the best thing to do would have been, probably try to get the dog into one of the elevator lobbies and then get it stuck in there between the doors.
Maybe.
But she's also trying to get away from Jim, too, right? So I'm not Jim, Tom. So the dog is going to attract Tom, too. So she's in trouble. So it's not like she could even get on a roof of a car. You're going to say something, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those, again, we don't want to worry too much about
reality.
But this is a typical thing, is that I don't think people often understand just how much faster dogs are than people.
Right.
she did not have nearly enough time to get to the car, break open the window, and crawl into the car. She would have been pegged about 5 steps after she had turned that corner.
I feel
bad a little bit for the dog, because the dog's just doing what he's been trained to do.
Right.
But the moment it takes a nice chunk out of her leg, I had no problem with her taking out the dog.
Yeah, because you just liked her leg.
It's self-defense.
Self-defense.
It's not but, like
well, she is.
She would have left the dog alone if the dog had left her alone.
Yeah. And, it's not like the dog, like, bit her and did a death roll or anything.
Getting bit by a dog.
You're confusing dogs with crocodiles, Mike.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying this is something that comes up in another Alexander Aja movie much later on. This one at least makes sense why her leg wasn't ripped off of her body.
Yeah, this one, if it was ripped off, I don't think she would be still alive, like in Crawl. Yeah. This one was more very realistic compared to Crawl. That was even though
I like how you just trailed off there.
Eric, you said this was pretty graphic. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of off screen, but the blood was just
there was blood spatter and hurt dog noises. The hurt dog noises always get me.
Yeah. Even if it's a bad dog.
Yeah.
Well, and because no matter like how big and bad the dog is, they all make the same noise when they die.
Right.
They all make this "I just stepped on a puppy" noise.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like she killed the dog and went. Right. You know, they give that.
Yeah, it gets that. Yeah, exactly. So it was kind of painful to hear, as Eric said, but again, it wasn't like devastating like say the Babadook or whatever where we've seen dogs get killed, because this dog did get a nice chunk out of her leg and we're on her side, so I was okay with it. It's like you gotta do what you gotta do.
No, I didn't have a problem with it. I'm just saying that is explicit violence, and you two are trying to pretend like it's not, but it is.
When you
it's
say
just an
you,
animal
when,
instead of a human,
you,
that's all.
When you say you two, you mean Abe and Mike. I didn't.
I mean you and Mike. You're the ones that were trying to convince me it wasn't violent.
No. You re-listen to this episode. I did not.
I will, fucker.
I'm talking about. I'm talking about shown bloody gory on film. You know, you don't see like him, the dog, compared to. Oh, what happens to Kevin Bacon in Friday the 13th? that's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
The dog is more of a Janet Leigh and Psycho. You see the stabbing and blood spatter.
Right. Yeah, that's a good analogy, Mike. And Mike, I mean not Mike, Eric. You'll have to do an apology, because when you re-listen to the episode, you will see that I did not disagree with you.
That is completely incorrect.
Nope. You see, you're, no, you're putting words.
Eric, you're wrong because Phil's going to be the one editing the episode.
So he'll just play something in from another one. I got
you. Nope, so nope, one way or another, you're going to be wrong.
Nope.
The only way I'm going to be right on this, Phil.
I will forward you the episode unedited right after we are done.
Oh, sure, and I'll believe it's not edited.
If you listen carefully, you would have heard the quotes around the term unedited.
If I send it literally 3 seconds after...
I know what was said. I'm good.
You're wrong. So it was pretty violent. But like the Janet Leigh psycho violence, except the blood was crazy.
Because
it
was red instead of black and white brown. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't chocolate syrup. It was actually blood. It went all over, like sprayed. It was like everywhere throughout the car.
It was kind of I guess you could call it a Red Christmas.
Oh, but Red Christmas Eve. To be technical.
Well, I'm sure. Abe
just killed the podcast.
I killed the fastest, killed the dog. But hey, at least Red Christmas is better than the new Black Christmas.
I can't say that for sure, but
that's true. We did see Red Christmas last year as our Christmas movie.
I think that's a pretty safe bet, though.
Yeah, I can see that.
Was Red Christmas last year?
Yeah, it was last year.
Yeah.
I love how everybody's just like, everyone just woke up from a hangover.
That was the Dee Wallace movie, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the Dee Wallace film, yeah.
Oh, God. It was,
I mean.
Anyway, back to D2.
Yeah, we want to relive Red Christmas.
One thing I did think was cool is towards the end of the movie when she finally gets a car, and they have this whole showdown where they end up playing chicken in the parking garage, and she wins. But I really like the fact that immediately after she has this triumphant moment and wins her game of chicken with the bad guy, she completely loses control of the car and crashes. I thought that was really awesome. Out,
yeah, that kind of sucked for her.
Yeah. See, one of the things I like... was that they said, and they set it up very well, is that she breaks into the rental car office, and she grabs, what is it, a letter opener?
Yeah.
And tries, you know, to put those lock picking skills she learned in the hood to work.
Oh, come on, Mike. You would
try anything at that point.
You would try it too.
Right. But don't tell me, because I mean, I haven't seen this movie in I don't know how many years, so I didn't remember what happened. But don't tell me I was the only one that was rolling my eyes at the thought that she was going to pick that she was going to pick her way out of those damn handcuffs.
She didn't, though, did she?
But she did, right? And that's what I was getting to is that she didn't pick her way out of the handcuffs, but she never gets rid of the letter opener because she keeps trying to pick her way out of the handcuffs. And so this turns out to be, in a weird way, Chekhov's letter opener, because she uses it to stab the son of a bitch in the eye.
I know. That was awesome.
And that was a great setup for that.
After she crashes the car, he comes over and thinks she's unconscious because she's leaning with her head against the horn of the car. And he's like, oh, I'll help you. And she stabs him in the fucking eye with the letter opener. And she's like, here, help me! You're gonna help me! And she starts strangling him with the handcuffs and goes, let me help you for a change, motherfucker!
Well, and this is why the man is a behavioral health individual, or as we called, crazy in the head. Because here he is, as Abe said earlier, he's trying to we talk about the pedestal, put her on a pedestal, but he's also trying to help her, quote unquote, help her. And this is him, after all the crap they've gone through, he's still like, oh, let me help you. Oh my God, let's see if you're okay. I'll save you. You know, and he's just literally clueless. This guy is fucking nuts. And yeah, this was perfect because the moment she gets him in the eye,
mm-hmm.
you know, even if you didn't check to see how much longer the film was, you know, okay, this is it.
Well, and then I like the fact that she never does successfully pick the lock, but she gets the actual key off of him and undoes the handcuffs and then cuffs him to the car. And then she's just going to leave him there.
Yeah, but, she was just going to report him to the cops.
But while she's walking away, he drops a C-bomb. And she stops in her track and turns around, and there's this little trail of gasoline coming from the car, and she uses the taser to light it up. Now, okay, science guy Mike, would this actually work?
Given the gas might be evaporating, I'll say to quote Jim Carrey, I'll say there's a chance.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, let me ask you this, Mike, to add to Eric's question. If the gas was that amount of gas, would you believe that an electric shock from a taser could ignite the gas?
I believe it could. I'm not saying that it would.
Mike, you haven't tried this yet? You haven't tried to do it?
Well, is it?
I don't usually have a taser on me. I have other ways of meeting women.
But, oh, God. Jesus.
Now, Abe,
he uses the line, hey, does this smell like chloroform to you?
Yeah, wait.
Dude, chemistry teacher, what do you think? I'm going to let it go to waste?
At gas stations, they usually want you to, like, discharge your vehicle and yourself before being near the gasoline. You know, mainly because a spark could cause a flame?
Theoretically.
Okay. Just so you know, I typed in the search into the browser, can a taser A, and I got IG, ignite gasoline.
Oh my God. So a lot of people have been asking this question. That's sad.
Ask it for a friend.
Yeah, right.
The company that sells taser. The spokesman did not immediately return messages seeking comment, but the company notes on its website that the taser can cause flammable materials, including gasoline, to catch fire.
Okay.
And there you go. Calculated risk, naturally in Toronto, Canada, because Canadians are assholes. Headline, cop new taser would likely ignite gas.
Well, that's the new thing, right? Instead of typing in Florida and a crime, just type in Canada and a crime.
There you go.
And you'll see what comes up.
Oh, here's another one. I like this one. Uncommon but horrific when tasers set their targets on fire.
All right, so right. Aha, did a lot of
thing. Research. That could happen.
That the man doused self in gasoline, then tased by, and I don't know who he got tased by. We'll say weirdo in parking garage, then so tased anyway, by officer under investigation.
So anyway, she uses the taser to light the gasoline on fire, and it goes all the way back up to the car and lights him on fire and blows up the car. And at that point, she runs away past the fire hose and the fire alarm that she could have pulled the whole time, and eventually makes her way out into the street.
Right, because she has his key.
The end.
So she can open the gate that prevented the homeless people from getting in?
Yes.
And then she went outside in wet clothes in freezing cold weather.
And just went for a walk.
And died of pneumonia later that evening.
Right. Well, actually, though, even though it goes to black, we do hear some the sound effects of the alarm. And I eventually hear people saying, are you okay? So,
are you okay, miss? But you don't hear the response, which is, I think I've caught pneumonia.
All right. Maybe she snapped.
I finally feel alive.
Right. Maybe she snapped. Maybe she's going into nut house.
She's going to be like Karen Black at the end of Trilogy of Terror.
She still got the taser she sent to the gas station.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So it's an odd ending because it's not really a happy ending, which.
Sure.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, she's been.
She lights the motherfucker on fire. What kind of happy ending are you looking for?
And
she's
cut out the only man in her life who cared about her.
Right. That's true.
She has.
That's not true. I'm sure her daddy
loves
her.
She knows she's going to have to pay like the company back for all the property damage. She's alienated the family.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And she's walking outside in the snow in, you know, dripping wet, you know, in December.
And all the taxpayers are pissed because they have to pay all that money for the cops and the fire department.
Oh, God. Yeah. She's going to get charged for the 911 call.
Yeah.
This is a definitely a downer ending. She killed the guy's dog, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. Oh my God, yeah. She's got Peter after her now.
Again, if this was a Hallmark movie, Christmas, hardworking woman with no love life meets a down to earth guy with a dog, bang. 90 minutes, there's wedding bells.
Oh, Jesus.
Lord.
Terrible. Let's see. I mean, it's she's gone through hell and back. Ends.
It's just a parking garage.
Which is an underground parking garage. And where do you find hell? Underground. Rest my case, Your Honor.
I mean, obviously it's figurative, but I mean that was hell for the woman. I mean, come on.
I think she was having fun.
Oh, jeez.
She got to swim.
She had a
corporate world wasn't challenging enough for her. She needed a good challenge.
She got to solve puzzles.
The man cooked for her too. I mean, dinner.
Good meal.
Some video entertainment?
Some music?
Oh, Lord.
Movie?
That's right. Music, too. I forgot about that. Video entertainment.
Some exercise?
That's exercise?
Guests? Played with the doggy?
Games?
Escape room? What was the entertainment game for the night?
Oh, boy.
All right. Let's end this, shall we?
Yeah. We're just
going to... Right. Well, before we do... do we have any news or films anybody seen that they wanted to talk about? Let folks know. Abe, I know you posted a couple of things on Facebook that seemed interesting. There was an anime that you posted that was interesting.
I'm trying to remember the name of it. Get back to that one. But yes, for one of the other things that I was focused on is the announcement of the remake of Resident Evil 3.
The video game, right?
Yes, which is slated to come out next year, in fact. So that's going to be pretty freaking awesome. It looks like it's going to be current consoles. I'm not sure what exactly they have changed in terms of, you know, gameplay elements, but graphically, it looks pretty solid. I'm going to keep an eye on it to see how it goes, because I really did enjoy the remake of the second Resident Evil game.
Now, Abe, when you said remake of the second one, is it just remastering of the game, or is it a complete
remake? It's a complete remake. New game engine and gameplay elements and stuff like that. Rather than the typical kind of fixed camera angles, they did kind of a more focused third person shoulder overview for the characters to play. And the Resident Evil remake beforehand was more kind of a new kind of restyling of the old gameplay style, while the second for Resident Evil 2 was the one I just described. I think it works pretty well. It's still effective at being a strong survival horror experience. As far as I know, that seems to be going to be the case with this new one. But they could also try to experiment with, you know, to see, you know, test the waters and see what else they can do. Because, you know, let me see. Yeah, I can't remember the name of the anime. But no, the Resident Evil 3 remake is pretty big because it's actually pretty soon. I was surprised how soon they were announcing it, because I honestly thought they would be waiting a little bit longer, considering that there's, you know, the new consoles they're working on over the horizon. So, but hey, you know, more Resident Evil is awesome for me. I'll look around and see if there's anything else that's current going on, and check with the others.
Sure. Before we do that, since the same time frame that Resident Evil 3 remake is coming out, so Q2, I think, of next year, 2020, is also Wonder Woman 84, June 6th, and the trailer came out.
Phil is a traitor to the cause. He's a heretic.
I didn't actually watch it yet, though, to be honest, so I plan to watch it, but I'm sure you saw it, Mike. What do you think?
It has one moment that seems really stupid out of context, where she grabs somebody's gun and ejects the bullet out of the gun, but then backhands the bullet, and I don't know why she would backhand the bullet. It looks slick, it looks stylish, but there's no real story revealed in it. So it'll be curious to see, you know, it's a teaser. We've got months and months to go before it's released.
Right. So. Yep. All right. Very well. Yeah. But at least it got a release date. So June 6th, I think, is what it was. And speaking of what Abe said, check with the others. What about you, Mike? Anything you've seen or wanted to mention that seemed pretty good that folks that listen to Dark Discussions would be curious about?
Let's see. Well, there was the Ghostbusters Afterlife trailer.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I don't know who else saw that.
I have not either.
Okay, has at least one clear shout out to the cartoon. It's none of the characters are in it. We know that the actors are coming back. We just don't know in what capacity. Are they going to be very brief cameos? Are they going to be more substantial roles?
Well, Harold Ramis obviously can't, unfortunately.
No, so it's actually, weirdly enough, focusing on Egon's family.
Okay.
And kind of, so it's starting out kind of with his legacy, and we'll see where it goes. Nothing I saw in the trailer made me think that this was anything more than, say, the first 30 minutes of the movie, which is probably the better way to go.
Right.
I liked it. I liked the tone. I liked Jason Reitman as a director, which is the main thing that's going to keep me from thinking this is a quick cash in.
Sure.
I've been watching, it's more fantasy than horror, but I've been watching His Dark Materials on HBO, which is one of the many series that HBO is desperately hoping becomes the next Game of Thrones.
Right. Yeah. A handful of them. Yeah.
And the same goes for Watchmen, and they're both really good, and I would recommend people watch both. Watchmen is, I know, gaining steam as a word-of-mouth show, supposedly. I don't know where either one of them are in ratings, and I have no idea what the ratings mean anymore, especially on a cable series. But I know they're planning, because His Dark Materials does have a young lead who's, I'm guessing, 13-ish. So they kind of have to rush into production before she ends up, you know, getting all old on them, you know, and aging out of the part. But, yeah, I recommend both of those series to anybody who's looking.
All right. Very good. Yep. And
I did find the new anime.
Okay.
That is called Raze Zero, Starting Life in Another World. It's sort of it's a fantasy anime, but it also has horror elements. Essentially, it's about this young man who gets transported to another world and learns kind of in the hard way that if he dies, he can be revived, but he comes back to life at a certain point where he begins, sort of like a reset button. So any progress or anything that happened beforehand is lost, but he tries to learn from what happened beforehand and tries again. but he didn't learn.
It sounds like that Tom Cruise movie.
Yeah, but he finds out later that if he can't abuse it because at a certain point, whatever happens if he dies again sticks. So someone who he tried to save dies at a certain point, and he gets so far, they won't come back even if he dies again. So it kind of plays really well with the psychological toll of what happens with this of experience death again and again, as the character becomes kind of unhinged and things get really dark, really twisted. The release date has been announced for the second season. The first season you can watch actually on Crunchyroll for free. And let me see. Okay. Let's see. So the second season of the series will be airing on April of next year. No exact day, but that's what they said.
All right. Very well. So not too far from now. But Crunchyroll, you can get the stuff for free. The first season, was it, you said?
Yep, on Crunchyroll you can actually find it.
Okay, that's cool. And you get that as an app, pretty much on you know, Apple TV, Roku, whatever. Sounds good. What about yourself, Eric?
Well, I've been keeping up with that Apple TV Plus series, The Servant.
Oh yeah, by M. Night
Shyamalan.
Yeah.
If people who listen to the show would probably want to check it out, at least if they've got the free trial. It's worth taking a peek at. I'm going to continue watching it. And last night I watched a movie called Daniel Isn't Real, which I would recommend. It's a 2019 film. It was just released on VOD. Yeah, so check that one out.
All right, very good. And that's just a VOD rent anywhere, pretty much?
Well, I don't check everywhere when I rent, so I don't know where it's available. It was available where I was looking, which was iTunes.
Now, is it a horror film, or is it or just genre?
I would classify it as a horror film, yes.
Okay. Worthy to check out, then, huh? So it could be something, a hidden gem, maybe?
Well, it's getting some buzz on social media. That's why I was looking at it. So,
okay.
I know Mr. Jason Lloyd recommends it.
Okay. Yeah.
Wait a minute. What are you doing on his dick now?
Oh,
you have to go there.
I'm not on his deck. I'm just looking at it.
Oh, jeez, you have to go there too. all right. Very well. But my wife actually, speaking of the first thing you talked about, Eric, Servant.
Yeah.
At first, my wife looked at it and said, I don't want to watch it. It kind of looks horror-y. But she actually said that after thinking about it and watching the trailer again, that she may be interested in watching it. So we may watch it together. So if you're sticking with it, that's a good sign. I'm impressed, though, that you're actually watching it weekly rather than just waiting until it comes out so you can binge it later.
Well, I made the mistake of not realizing that I thought the full series had dropped, because Apple fucks with you, man. They dropped the first three episodes.
Right.
Instead of doing it one week at a time for the whole way, they dropped three episodes and then do it weekly. So I thought I was going to be able to binge the whole thing, and then got to the end of the third episode. I was like, fuck!
You know, you can binge it all at once if you just wait.
If you'd listened to what I was saying, I thought the whole thing was there when I started.
they tricked him, because there was three episodes there, and he thought that meant the whole season was there, and it was really just three episodes, and they tricked him. For folks who are curious, Apple Plus, which is pretty impressive, but obviously it's not getting the buzz to say Disney Plus. So, but it's a competitor, Netflix and Disney Plus and all those others. It's
not going to have nearly as much material for people who enjoy horror as, say, Shudder. It's far more drama based material on the Apple TV Plus. But from what I've watched, what they have done is high quality. Whether or not the material is for you or not, you can decide for yourself. But it's got production value for sure.
And the question is going to be whether or not it catches on with the public, right?
Yeah. Well, and they got a pretty good hook, which is that they're giving a year for free to anybody who buys a new Apple device, which is a lot of people. So.
Yeah. Right. Will people tune into what they're selling? Right, that's always the question with any kind of entertainment.
That's what Eric just mentioned. But the thing is that they are getting big names to star or produce or direct the series. So, you know, they got Jennifer Aniston, and they got
they've got one show that has Steve Carell, Jennifer Aniston, Reese Witherspoon, and Mark Duplass in it all at once. Oh, and Billy Crudup too.
Oh,
yeah, it's an all-star cast.
And then they have Jason Momoa's science fiction one, and then they have M. Night Shyamalan as the showrunner for Servant. So as Eric mentioned, like, it's top quality stuff. Whether it's for you depends. And the question
right,
is,
and yet
which is what you're saying, and that's valid. But at least they got big names that would at least make pique interest if it won't.
Well, we're in a kind of a weird point where people aren't generally going to see things just based on who the stars are. And I mean, the biggest show right now is The Mandalorian that stars a puppet.
But that's Star Wars, though.
Yoda is taking over the universe, and I haven't even watched the show.
Yeah, and that doesn't really count because it has a built-in audience because it's Star
Wars. Yeah, well, but for Star Wars, Clone Wars, Rebels, Resistance, nothing at all like this. So it's just weird. And I'm not trying to criticize Apple. It's just a matter of this is always a thing. Just like with, you know, I said, they're trying to make on HBO is trying to make another Game of Thrones. It's really hard to do that.
Yeah, the streaming space has become very, very crowded.
Yeah, there's a lot.
What I was trying to say, Mike, is that the Apple has a very good bait to get people to at least try it.
Yeah. Right, and the question is, will it catch on?
Exactly.
Can people make the time to do it? Because right now we have so much, you know, and how many people do they need to do that? And then what any of these channels needs, and apparently Disney got very lucky with, is you need a show like Mandalorian did, like HBO had Game of Thrones and Sopranos before that. Is there a thing that will drive audiences to you?
Mm-hmm.
And as opposed to, I've got it. Are they going to come back? Are they going to pay money after a year to keep coming back? That's what the real question is. And sometimes something super popular can be super freaking awful.
True.
So, you know, so it's not
like
even
Taylor Swift.
Like Taylor Swift. So there's no reason. And you can have series that are superbly crafted and nobody gives a shit.
That's true.
Yeah. So that's what I'm curious to see. Will they be able to get that kind of buzz? Because that's what they're gonna need. And now the nice thing is that Apple has, I don't know if you're aware of this, a fuckload of money.
Yes, they're sitting on a large mountain of money, any amount of which they can spend to make this at least float for a number of years.
Right. This isn't some like harebrained Ralph Cramden scheme where he needs people to start tuning in immediately or he's going to lose all of his investment.
Well, and it's like what Microsoft did with the Xbox. The Xbox bled money, I think, for the first 3 years of its existence.
Right.
Yep. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, same with Shudder, right? I mean, Shudder is slowly willing to take losses for the first couple of years, and now they're slowly building up. They got Creepshow and Bob Briggs and all these other things. So it's.
I think in the end, content is king. I do think there's enough space for any of these services to be successful. Well, and it depends on what your definition of successful is. Successful to Disney and Apple might be different than it is to AMC. I don't know. So we'll see.
Well, there's that. And it's also, you know, I think, and a lot of people think that we're getting crowded out, and none of us understands the business side of it.
Right.
But I think what's going to be happening, you're going to start crowding out some of the smaller channels. unless they are something like Shudder that appeals just to a niche. But even they could end up being, you know, pushed aside because you've got
right.
HBO Plus.
They do have a big company backing them though, because it's owned by AMC or whatever.
Right, and then the question is: are you going to start seeing coalitions? Right, you know.
Well,
so,
but here's the thing, though, and this is what I think a lot of these services bank on. Which is that they'll give you a free trial and hope you forget about it, and they'll just keep charging you.
Right.
And I think that's a very likely thing to happen, because I'll be honest, I was still paying for a disc subscription to Netflix for about probably 5 years without using it more than twice a year, just because I forgot about it. I forgot I had it. So with them offering these free trials, and particularly Apple with the year-long free trial for anybody who buys a new Apple product, I think after a year, people are much more likely to forget that that's on there and it's a thing they're going to get charged for. And Apple has priced it reasonably enough at $7 a month that
right.
people might not even notice. So we'll see.
Well, and to be honest, like, for example, we got the Disney Channel, the 1 year subscription for $67, whatever
right.
it is. And my wife was like, did we really need it? I mean, I'm not really watching it, and I don't care about superheroes and Star Wars and all that. And the kids still go off to YouTube over Disney Plus anyway. And I said, well, that's a fair point, but eventually, you know, once Mandalorian is over, then I'll binge it, because I'm like you, Eric. I'm not going to bother watching it until it's done. The thing is, though, is I said, well, we did have the kids watch Pinocchio for movie night, and that one movie pays for the month. You know, if you're paying $4.99 a month or $4.78 a month, whatever it is, renting Pinocchio for $5 off of iTunes or Amazon or wherever pays for 1 month of Disney Plus or Apple Plus or whatever.
Right.
So,
right.
So, and then she said, yeah, that's a good point. When you look at it that way, Phil, even if we only watch it once and we didn't have to rent the film, it pays for the whole month. So it was like just renting the film anyway, and yet we had the option all that time to watch something anyway. So people are more apt, as Eric said, to just let it go, even if they do know they're paying it for $4.99 a month, because
it's a cup of coffee.
Right, exactly. Right, exactly. If I watch Chernobyl, like I watched the Chernobyl on HBO, you know, and that paid for the month, basically.
Yeah.
You know, even though I didn't watch anything else that month, say, for example. So, you know, if you look at it that way, you know, and it's still cheaper than going to the movies. $4.99 a month is cheaper than spending $15 for a ticket at the theaters.
So my plan is to rotate. I will probably always keep my Netflix subscription. And Amazon Prime, just because I like that for the shipping benefits anyway.
Yeah.
But then I'll rotate between, you know, Shudder I'll keep on just because I want to support them, but like Hulu, Disney Plus, Apple TV Plus, I'm probably only going to have one of those at a time, unless I get locked into like I've got this year long free trial for Apple TV Plus. So yeah, I'm going to watch it the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Yeah, it depends. It's like you said, Eric. It depends on what you want to watch. You know, when Game of Thrones.
There's
on,
a bunch of stuff on Hulu that I'd like to watch, but I'm not going to activate a subscription yet until, like, then when I do, I'm going to watch a whole bunch of stuff on Hulu for a while, almost exclusively.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Because
the stuff is piling up on Hulu for me to watch. There's a season of Castle Rock. There's a season of Handmaid's Tale.
There's a couple of decent movies that I'm getting good word about.
Oh,
like, the Catch 22 series I want to watch.
They have that Blumhouse movie series, right?
Yeah.
Into the Dark.
Yeah, Into the Dark, which everybody's raving about. And they have like two seasons of that now. So that's 20 something films. And then what's the other one that I was looking at? Showtime. I still want to catch that show that Kirsten Dunst is in, so I'm tempted to get at that. But
talking about.
No, it's more of a drama comedy more than it's not genre related, but it's supposed to be pretty good. And I'm a fan of Kirsten Dunst, so yeah, it's called something about Florida, Sunny Days in Florida or something like that. It's what it's called. I forget what it's called, but I may get it.
I have a vague notion of what you're referring to.
Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking of getting it once the season's over, then I can just binge it. Because right now they're doing what the Game of Thrones thing, where it's once a week type of thing. All right, so I guess we can get our final thoughts of P2. So let's start with you, Abe.
I thought this movie was really good. I mean, honestly, I'm pretty surprised I didn't see it when it first came out. But I'm glad I did now. It's got some plot, but it's got strong performances, some creepy moments, one hell of a kill scene, and it's tightly paced. If you have an Amazon Prime account, or Amazon General, or you have your Vudu as well, you can go check it out there. It's worth a watch. Overall, it's a good experience, and I had fun talking about it.
All right, very good. Eric, but before you give your thoughts, you do another podcast with your buddy Dan?
I do. It's a general interest podcast called The Askanties Podcast. That's spelled Askanity. You can find it wherever you got this one.
And what about P2?
P2. I recommend P2. Yeah, it's a pretty solid movie, and although with the quantity of horror movies I have consumed since it came out, it probably doesn't have the impact on me personally that it once would have, but that doesn't mean it's bad. It's a solid effort and worth checking out.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, it's a surprisingly because there wasn't much buzz around it. Film. It's a really good horror film. It's a really good thriller. Critical darling, in a sense. It made its money back. It's one of those little horror films that, low budget, yet makes good money at the box office, similar to Blumhouse before Blumhouse existed. It was a film that made a bunch of people stars in their profession, from cinematographer to director to screenwriters to music and whatnot, even if they're not household names, and has two really strong leads that really carry this film, that they should be very proud of, whether they ever do anything else. And I would give it a big thumbs up and definitely a hidden gem. Mike.
Yeah, it's a fun film. Solid little thriller. I don't think it's going to knock your socks off. But again, it's a pretty firm little, movie. It's tight. It's, intense, has good performances. It's hard to say you'd be disappointed.
Yep. Absolutely. Once again, thank you to Gage, folks, for sending us his voicemail. Appreciate it. Keep on sending them, folks, voicemails, emails, and whatnot. We love your feedback about anything and everything, to know that you're out there. Definitely check us out on Facebook as well, Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook, and the email is darkdiscussions@aol.com. P2, once again, 2007 film, made almost three times its budget. Again, it's if you're a fan of Alexander Aja, it's his.
Aha!
That's right. It's his baby. He produced it and he co-wrote it, and he put the money up for it because he felt it was a film worthy of seeing. And sure enough, it gets positive reviews everywhere. So check it out. Available everywhere VOD is. It's also very, what we call cheap on disc, $5.99, and you can actually get it free on Vudu with commercials, though uncut, if you want to check it out that way as well. But $5.99 for the disc isn't bad, and you can rent it or even buy it on VOD for like $5 too. Roger Ebert gave it 3 out of 4 stars with a big thumbs up, which is pretty good too, if you're a fan of Roger Ebert. I guess with all that stated, once again, P2 Christmas Edition, Dark Discussions Podcast. Eric, why don't you lead us out?
right. Thank you for tuning in to listen to us talk about P2. Come back next week. We'll have a different topic.